Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Pod. Because you're listening to our show, we can get you a free crate of craft beer just for listening to us. Get yourself on to beer52.com/thistle and you will get yourself 8 craft beers which cover all of the Six Nations countries, a copy of Ferment magazine and a little snack to enjoy with the rugby as well. That's beer52.com/thistle. All you have to do is pay for postage and packaging, £5.95, and you will get free 8 craft beers delivered to your door. That's beer52.com/thistle. Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. The Six Nations is done and dusted, so we are here to have a look back at the tournament that was. I am David, and as ever, I am joined by Matt. How are you, bud?
Good, mate. I think I'm still recovering from that weekend. I mean, how good?
What, your skiing holiday?
That was also good, but I mainly meant the rugby.
Yeah, unbelievable scenes. And Alan, is that a smile on your face?
Yeah, just gave me a nice beer.
I'm giving you the beer, yeah.
Give me a nice beer. It's been a good few days. Still don't know how I feel though about the game.
I know, but just every single day it's just nice to see a kind of a new angle pop up on the media somewhere on Twitter.
Yeah.
You can just sort of relive that second half.
A new hot take.
Yeah.
Or a new gripe from Eddie Jones about why it isn't his fault.
Been a lot of strong memes sort of popping up and videos all over the internet.
Oh, yeah.
It's been a great week for that specific niche area of the internet.
It has been very busy on our Twitter. That is at Thistle Rugby Pod. We've gone through 5,000 followers, lads.
Boom.
That's pretty big.
That was the goal. 5K yeah. by the end of the Six Nations.
Yeah, that was the goal. So our investors are going to be very happy with that return.
Yeah.
I'm feeling very, very good about that. We've had a couple of emails. We'll get into those later. That is the Thistle Rugby @gmail.com, and the Instagram is ticking over with some terrible memes as ever. Thistle_rugby_pod. Why don't we start off on a positive? Let's have a look at this email. Bit of a review, but in the mailbag from Alan Roberts says, former Edinburgh Rugby season ticket holder relocated to Seattle last year. We haven't had anything from Seattle before. Thanks very much, Alan. Thanks for keeping me updated on all things Scottish rugby and keep up the good work. Would be lost without you. Shout out to fellow season ticket holders back home, Sam Walker and Callum Patterson. Callum, hope the hemorrhoids aren't keeping you down, pal. Chin up. So there you go.
Tough times, as Matt will know, hemorrhoids are not fun.
Yeah, it's really tough. So Matt, Callum, you can talk about, you know.
Yeah, it's a real community of us, so it's nice to see some support there.
Weirdly, a strong correlation between the anime community as well, so.
Absolutely.
Don't know what goes on at those conferences.
I think we should move on.
There's been a couple of reviews on iTunes as well, 5 stars, so you can do that. But Most importantly, iTunes, Acast, wherever you are, hit subscribe and you will get us absolutely every week talking Scottish rugby. So we're going to kick off, have a look at some news from what's been going on outside of the Six Nations. Few little updates, transfers, and some Super Six news in there. Then we're going to talk about Twickenham. Then we're going to talk about the return of the Pro 14 and some big returning names for Edinburgh as well. Should we get cracking, lads?
Let's go. I mean, I think most people are listening to this pod not for the news.
Yeah.
If we're honest.
Should we just get through the news then?
Yeah.
Young Scotland under-20s cap Glenn Young has moved from the Newcastle Falcons to Harlequins. What do you guys make of that?
That feels like a good move. I mean, on the off chance that Falcons get relegated as well.
I know. I mean, obviously, he's done pretty well. Got a lot of starts. And I think Harlequins are sort of revamping their team for next year. And they're doing pretty well. So he's joining a club on the up.
I think the Quins have had like six signings this week.
Yeah.
And they've all been quite tasty.
I mean, would you describe Glenn Young as a tasty signing?
I think they've all sounded a bit average.
Some of the other ones were quite tasty.
I bet you can't name a single one. I don't think you can name one.
That Italian guy.
It's Argentinians, wasn't it?
Well, it was Campagnaro.
Campagnaro is Campagnaro. Italian. Oh, okay, and then some big Argentinians. Tasty.
Right, next bit of news.
Next. Speaking of tasty, Darcy Ray and Alex Allen re-signing at Glasgow. I suppose with Jamie Batty going the other way, it's a little bit of big news for props this week, but that's pretty decent business from Glasgow. Two guys that have kind of stepped up this year.
I don't know, but Allen seems to just sort of been in the system for a long time and not really like sort of
kind of ever been a star to there.
Yeah, exactly, from being a qualified front row. You know, so
I feel that's a bit harsh.
Maybe I'm being a bit harsh. I mean, he always does a good job.
Yeah.
But I suppose, just in contrast to Darcy Ray, who you think could potentially be a more established Glasgow player, just because he's got age on his side, that's probably the more exciting one.
I mean, how old's Alex Allen?
Older.
Is he? Not?
He's definitely played a lot more for Glasgow than Darcy Ray has.
Fair, Alex Allen's 27. Yeah. For some reason, I had this in my head that he was a lot younger than that.
No, and Darcy Ray, I think, is, well, not too old. Not too young.
24.
Yeah, there you go.
Solid Irvine boy. I think Darcy Ray's come on leaps and bounds this year. I don't think...
Yeah, he stepped up in Heineken Cup games, played really well.
Yeah, I mean...
Did you play in that Saracens match?
Yeah, but it feels like it's been him and Keble have been the two props that have had the most game time this year. Good signing and definitely good guy to have behind Xander Ferguson, two sort of big Scottish lads coming through.
Yeah, definitely. And Jamie Batty has moved along the M8 to Edinburgh. I think we talked about this when it was first sort of discussed, but Edinburgh seemed to be putting together quite a nice-looking squad for next year. Watsonians have confirmed their coaching ticket for the Super Six. Edinburgh, former Edinburgh players Fergus Pringle and Nicky Walker as head coach and assistant coach, respectively. Lads, as Stumel Ultras, what are your views on Watsonian setup for the Super Six?
Well, I think Walker was always touted as a coach to come in when it emerged that Laurie was going to Edinburgh, but I think Fergus Pringle was a bit of a left field name. I mean, obviously he's been around the Scottish setup for quite a while, played for Edinburgh, played for Scotland A, but I didn't actually know he was still in the coaching system. He's been sort of development officer.
Yeah, East Lothian development officer.
Yeah, and doing a bit of work, I think, with the under-20s and as an assistant coach. So it feels a bit random. It's not as if that's someone who they've kind of earmarked for progression through the ranks. But I don't really care how Watsons get on. So, you know, if he's a bad signing,
maybe they
could
give Nicky Walker the big job after the under-20s away.
Yeah, he's too much of a risk.
Debacle.
Wasn't there something about how he's previously been involved in the Romania setup as well?
It says here he coached Romania under-20. Which seems quite rogue.
It's a real niche job.
Yeah.
Is that a good level?
I mean, they don't play in the World Cup, do they? They play in like the Junior Trophy.
Yeah.
So
how do many under 20s get on in the Super Six?
That's a good question, actually.
Beat Sonians.
Yeah, they beat Sonians, obviously.
Probably beat the Sonians.
Schumann would beat Sonians now.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens with it.
Yeah,
with
absolutely.
Guys.
And not necessarily news, but the season passes for the Scotland matches next year have come out, and I've got a personal gripe about them.
I mean, as you we were chatting about earlier, in terms of for the cost per game to go up and for the quality of game to probably come down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking entirely personally, I don't know how the things relate to other people's seats, but I've gone 13% more expensive per game. And this year, it's two games against France, one against Georgia, and one against England.
Yeah.
So there's no big sort of like Southern Hemisphere beast. Like last year, Argentina and South Africa came to Murrayfield as part of that package.
Yeah.
Ireland, Wales, Italy, Fiji as well. So there's like...
And you're right. Two of those games aren't on a Saturday. Which does make a difference from an experience perspective.
Yeah, definitely. Georgia on a Friday night, it's not the same as, like, you know, Ireland on a Saturday, is it?
I think Friday night could be good, but when it's on a Sunday as well, I think that definitely sort
of detracts.
It's
France on a Sunday.
Yeah.
The issue with the Friday is just the actual the pre-game and having to, like, you know, leaving work and getting across. You don't kind of get to have that atmosphere of, like, pre-match at Murrayfield having a few drinks.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I suppose is something you could argue for your price increase, is that the general match day experience at Murrayfield has improved massively. So if you get there a couple of hours early, there are much better, there's music, there's great bars, there's good food, and you can do whatever you want. But on a Friday night, you're not going to get as much of enjoyment out of that.
There's a guy who tweeted us saying that he's sort of doing an adult and child ticket for the games, and for 2018/2019, his kid's ticket price has gone up 27%. The next season, it's going to go up 51% cost per game.
Mate, boy, they pay. They pay.
It's a lot. It's a lot of money,
right? Dodson knows
a lot of money.
We're interested to see if they keep the sold out Murrayfield for next year.
I don't think you're selling at Murrayfield on a Friday night for Georgia.
That's a tough sell.
Even a Sunday for France, I don't.
Sunday for France is in the Six Nations, though.
You're right,
World Cup warm-up.
Oh, I was thinking the
World Cup warm-up is the Saturday of the August bank holiday. So that's quite a nice, actually, that's quite a good day out.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's the Sunday in the Six Nations. And then the other game is, of course, us retaining the Calcutta Cup again against England.
Yeah, and how much would you pay for that?
You know, around about £56 per game at the moment, I think.
You know, that's pretty good value for the England game specifically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, especially post us winning the World Cup as well.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe I should get in now.
Yeah, lock in
and
a good
become
price.
A really dirty ticket tout when we've got the Calcutta Cup as world champions.
Dave.Leslie at Via Gogo is selling our ticket for £250.
I think the same guy that tweeted us did say, the only way I'm going to be able to afford the rest of the tickets is if I flog my England tickets on Via Gogo.
Which we do not endorse.
We don't, but, you know, could work out in the end. That's the way around it.
Well, we'll leave that one there. Shall we talk about...
Are we going to give Edinburgh a shout-out for the Champions Cup quarterfinal?
Yes, we should. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I suppose we can trail some big news for next week as well. So, obviously, Edinburgh quarterfinal against Munster next weekend. They're already over 30,000 seats sold. I mean, I think, what is the record? 37.5 or something like that?
Was it for a Saracens quarter? There was a quarterfinal, I think, that Saracens were involved in. 100% 37,000 is the record for a Hiding Cup quarterfinal.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yes. So I think Edinburgh are pretty much on course to beat that if they continue
sales. What did Edinburgh get for that Toulouse match back in the day?
Well, I think they got about 32, then that was surpassed to 37 by Saris, and then they're looking to go over 40 for this game against
Saris at Wembley.
I said too much without really knowing.
Okay, it doesn't matter. But it's
a big stadium that can hold 37,000 people at least.
Yeah.
So that's coming up next weekend, and we are...
It just shows like demand's there. I don't think Glasgow can move it to Celtic Park and get 37,000 for a quarterfinal.
It'd be more difficult, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know.
Interesting.
Big city event, but anyway.
Well, we will see. I think we will see, but we're going to be back next week. Big quarterfinal preview pod. Of course, Glasgow playing against Saracens as well, but don't want to get everybody too excited, but it looks like we've secured the sweet prince himself.
You what?
Chris Dean is going to
be coming.
The prince that is promised has been delivered.
Are you promising me the prince that was promised?
I think it's happening. It could well be happening. Next Thursday night, we're going to be speaking to the man himself,
You're going to be okay, mate?
Ahead of that quarterfinal.
Just won't turn up. Too nervous.
So that is very much worth coming back to next week. But let's talk about what you all came here for. 38-all at Twickenham, Scotland, with probably the best comeback in some... the biggest comeback in Six Nations history?
It's the biggest comeback in Tier 1
rugby history. And the only team ever to score six tries at Twickenham.
Can we call it a comeback?
Yeah.
We can definitely call it a comeback.
Okay. You're going from 0 points to 2 points and 31-0 down to 38-all. I mean, yeah. Let's not get like too into the definition of a comeback, but at halftime.
It was definitely a comeback for a draw that was so unbelievably unpredictable. After half an hour of unbelievably woeful play by Scotland.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that the first half was the worst performance in the kind of the history of Townsend, and the second half was the best performance in the history of like the Townsend era?
Yes.
Are you trying to think?
I was trying to think about the USA game. Second half against the USA was terrible, but they're just so not comparable.
Exactly.
Like a summer tour against the USA is just not the same.
Yeah. Well, you could argue that the team that played against USA in terms of like first choice players is actually not that dissimilar to the team on Saturday.
Yeah, no. Exactly.
I mean, I was at Twickenham and honestly, and I'd been there 2 years ago when we lost 61-21 or whatever it was. And it felt worse this time. I think it was mainly
what, at halftime.
At halftime, I was like, "We are done." We had a very honest conversation amongst the six of us that were there about leaving at halftime.
Really,
and I feel bad about it now. But I was just like, I don't want to be here to watch England put 70 past us.
And I can't think of a Scotland game in recent memory where you would have thought that, where you would have said that.
No,
you know.
But the interesting is, it was. There was obviously the score, it was 31-0, but there was almost a little bit around the manner of how that happened.
The manner of it.
And it genuinely, obviously I was watching on TV, and it at points did feel like one of those old kind of school games where there was a much better team playing against like a much shitter team. Yeah.
And like a bigger team that was and bullying a bigger team. Them.
Yes.
I think the physicality bit was massive. It felt like every time England got the ball that they were just falling off tackles because they just weren't up to the task of doing it.
Yeah.
It was a really strange atmosphere in that everything England did just looked extremely threatening and Scotland just couldn't get anything going. They couldn't get any ball. When they did, they were kicking to England's hands and just so bad. Like so bad.
It could have been worse. Like 31-7 going to half time with the way that first half played out.
God.
It was actually a good position to be in.
I think one of the biggest moments of it was when England didn't kick the point right at the end of the first half, went to the corner, and Scotland managed to keep them out. I think if England had managed to respond with a try off the back of McAnally's try, that's completely different. It's a completely different ball game. So
I think some people were criticizing England for not taking the points there, but I mean,
why would you?
Why would you? Like, how can you foresee that second half coming?
It's
never happened in the history of rugby before.
I do think from the sort of the pre-match coverage, you know, it does feel like a mix of Scotland and England and then Saracens and Glasgow. There is like a bit of bad blood between a lot of those guys.
Yeah.
On either side. Like, I know obviously Billy Vunipola was talking about it, but obviously like Farrell clearly gets riled up by Scotland.
It's literally Ryan Wilson.
But I even think people like, if playing against Finn Russell is probably quite an infuriating experience because he's got... I don't think he's not like Ryan Wilson, but you know he's got that kind of air of arrogance.
Yeah.
I think he has, and I think...
He's cheeky.
When Rambo scored his try, Finn converted it. Apparently he put a word in Farrell's ear after that had been charged down as well. And after the pass to Sam Johnson in the second half, he's sort of like... patting Nathan Hughes on the head after he's obviously put Johnson through for the score.
But do you not think
he's just like having a good time and when he does stuff he's like, "Oh, sorry lads."
But the whole thing seems to rile up England far more than Scotland getting affected by it. Like
we didn't even fire out Telfer this year.
No, exactly. And like no one, I mean Townsend's not that kind of coach, but he didn't really mention anything about
We fired Telford against ourselves.
Any niggle.
Telford just came out and rinsed the Scotland
team. Gone full circle. That's what we should have been doing every year.
So I don't think the McAnally trial was really a turning point in that match. I actually think that it was McAnally scored the try. It was a bit of a freak, to be fair. Yeah. I don't know what Johnny May was doing. It kind of was 31-7. And then for the rest of the first half, it was all England. There wasn't tight change.
Yeah. Well, they were 31 up after, 28 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
So actually, I think McAnally's try, but in the context of not conceding points for 10 minutes.
Yes.
It's not like a turning point, but there is there was a momentum shift, or at least an arresting of the complete domination of England.
I get that. I actually tweeted that Scotland are the first team to score a consolation try in the first half of a Six Nations game.
Very good content. I enjoyed that a lot.
But I actually think, because the thing is, Graham scored that try, maybe about 8 or 9 minutes into the second half. And even then, it was just like, whatever.
Yeah, that was 30.
But then literally a minute afterwards, Price did that kick.
Yeah.
And then that's when, I don't know what it was like in the stadium, because that took it to 19?
Yeah.
And then that 31-19 is when, even in the pub, we were like...
One more.
12 points.
Yeah.
Like, that's you in it.
Yeah. That's exactly how it felt in this. I mean, I think Darcy's try, my main feeling about that was, right, you know, at least we fired a shot, you know, 31-14, even if we close the book now... I'll take that. I will literally take that in my final
and
result.
I think you could see that in the differing reactions from the Scotland players for that try and the Bradbury try.
Yes.
The Price is kind of like, right, a bit of relief. We've got on the scoreboard. This isn't going to be a complete dicking. And then Bradbury, it's like, holy shit, boys, we're in this one.
And I think everyone did sort of turn around in the same way, thinking, right, one more and we're actually in this game.
So what do you think happened at halftime? Was there anything sort of critical that turned the tide?
Well, I actually, and Alan and I were talking about this before the pod, I don't necessarily buy the argument thing, or at least the fact that I don't buy the argument that Scotland massively changed their strategy in the second half. I thought they just implemented the same strategy, but Finn still kicked away huge amounts of ball, and we just chased it better, and his kicks were finding grass, so England weren't coming back and adding interest on it, and we were... chasing up, and the intensity of the contacts were much better. We were getting on top of them. We were turning the ball back over rather than just being like, here you go, lads. Here's acres of space and some bad defense for you to run at.
The England defensive line in the first half was so quick.
Yeah.
And it seemed very quickly in the second half. Like, Ellis Genge, with literally 25 minutes ago, looked like he was about to die. I know he came on earlier than he was meant to, but they all looked absolutely... fucked.
He was no, I mean, it's admittedly not fair, Darcy Graham against Ellis Genge, but when he came across the cover, he was like nowhere near, just a slight change of direction.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously a lot of people made like something of the fact that Finn was arguing with Townsend at half time, but when you read what he said, you're telling us to kick, and when we kick, they just run it back and cut us open. When we run it, they're just hitting us behind the gain line and winning the ball back. Second half, we just came out with nothing to lose, played our rugby, scored some great tries. It's like, what? It's not really a change in strategy.
He talks about kicking it out of our half as well.
Yeah, I missed out that bit to make my argument a bit better.
No, I know, but it's just like, I don't actually... And then again...
But
I
he's
don't
saying,
know if
he's saying like, you know, we shouldn't kick and we shouldn't hold on. It doesn't really make much sense.
He also walked back those comments a little bit. I don't know if people have listened to the Johnny Beattie interview he did on BBC Radio Scotland. When he's speaking to Johnny Beattie, he pretty much says, oh, I was on the physio table. I didn't really have much of a conversation. Yeah. I spoke to Ali a little bit, but that was it because I'd taken a knock. He doesn't talk about the Townsend stuff. It could be the PR department getting to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly.
Mark Dodson's piling straight in 20 minutes after the game.
But I mean, as I said, I think the biggest thing in the stadium that I noticed was just that we came out in the second half and we actually looked like we were interested in winning the game, or at least playing the game.
Yeah.
The line speed massively increased.
Well, they're interested in winning and playing the game. But
in the first half, I was looking back at my WhatsApp, so I was texting my brother when I went for a piss at halftime, and he was just like, it looks like nobody can be arsed.
Yeah.
And it felt like that in the stadium, but I also feel that, you know, it was so bad that I'm not sure I was seeing it through, like, a rational head, because I was like, oh my god, this is the worst thing that's ever happened.
I just think when momentum's against you, there's just
Yeah.
So, and it's the same in the second half for England. Like, it looked as if England had completely, you know, thrown in the towel. Yeah. It's just hard to change it. I mean, what I think about is, what I've been sort of questioning is, how much will Scotland actually take away from that match that they can apply into other matches going forward, particularly at the World Cup? Because I just can't see a World Cup half kind of unfolding the way it did there.
Yeah.
Because obviously Scotland are, at the moment, like one of the best teams in the world. Maybe just behind New Zealand when the game opens up.
Yep.
And that doesn't really happen very often, as this Six Nations showed. So, obviously you can manufacture those type of opportunities, but Scotland haven't been great at that recently, and I wonder if it was just a sort of a bit of an odd half that gave them those opportunities.
Yeah, I think you've got to give a little bit, particularly in the first 10, 15 minutes of the second half, which would have been England players inevitably being, this is done.
Yeah.
We are home and dry. We're already on the beers. We've won this comfortably.
Yeah.
And then they let the big mo go. That goes to Scotland, and they're in all kinds of trouble. Mm. I think what Scotland can take out of it is probably just that feeling. I think if we had ended this Six Nations having only beaten Italy, followed by four fairly abject losses, three games which we could have won, the England game, if we'd lost it in the region of 30 points, the mentality of those Scotland players going into the first warm-up against France, knowing they've got to play Ireland again, would have been completely rock bottom. But scoring 38 points at Twickenham, It completely changes the mindset. They'll be able to go in with a much more positive feeling into what is probably going to be about a two-month-long camp this summer.
Well, that's the thing. And then at the same time, you've got like Barkley, Hogg, Jones, those kind of guys coming back. And you're like, yeah, actually, we're in a pretty decent place.
Playing devil's advocate,
yep.
Does that second half just cover up the massive cracks that have been showing up in this whole tournament?
Possibly. What cracks?
In terms of, outside of around about 60 minutes against Italy and 40 minutes against England and maybe 20 minutes against Wales, Scotland have been pretty shit.
Oh, yeah, no, I completely agree with that.
And actually, that second half is kind of now just dominating the whole narrative of kind of the Scotland Six Nations. And actually, when you sort of peel it back, it's like there was one win against Italy, it's like a freak draw against England, and three really winnable games.
Yeah.
Two at home. Yeah.
I think you make the argument that Scotland could have won every game, maybe except from France.
France.
They could have won every other game. Possibly should have held out for the England game. We were within seven against Wales and Ireland, or roundabout.
Yeah.
With opportunities in both.
I think it even goes back to like the try thing. Like, we're like, oh, off this England game, everyone's like, oh, Scotland are this unbelievable try-scoring team. Well, actually, three tries across three games before that.
Yeah.
And actually, that attack was really struggling to get going for most of the Six Nations.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I wonder if, once again, though,
I wanted to make sure that I made this negative.
No, I think it's right.
Absolutely right, though. And
but you do look back at the injuries that the team have had.
Yes.
And then, you know, not really having a fit Finn Russell for the France game, at least.
Yes.
And then he's finding his way back into form.
Yeah.
I think you have to bear those things in mind. And I think that, you know, the players who have come in, and particularly in that match, like Darcy Graham has had an incredible tournament, and losing someone, or like having Seymour off form at the moment, is not an issue anymore.
Yeah.
Bradbury's potentially emerged.
Completely.
As our number eight, and we've been looking at that position for a while. And then you've got your guaranteed starters coming back from injury.
You know, the annoying thing about Bradbury is I think since we started this pod, we've been wanting someone to just put in a really big number eight performance. Strauss away to France 2 years ago is probably the only other number eight performance that kind of rivals Bradbury against England last week.
Absolutely.
Bradbury will now not play number eight for the rest of the season because Bill Matta will start for Edinburgh at eight.
Yes.
That's true.
And Bradbury's role changes because Matta's in that team.
I think you're right. But then I suppose Bradbury hasn't been playing eight all season. He's been injured for a lot of it. He comes into the Scotland team, plays six, doesn't really work.
Yeah.
And then he plays eight for a couple of games and does pretty well. So your top carrier and everything. So, I mean, I would rather he was playing eight, but
there was an interesting thing, I think, I don't know whether it was came from Bradbury or someone in the camp, around actually having the time off has been quite good for Bradbury because it's allowed him to, like, put on a bit of bulk.
Bulk?
Yeah, he's, like, added, like, I don't know, like a stone or just under a stone. Just, like, because he's been in the gym.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting seeing him when he scored his try. And obviously he gets the ball on, like, a sort of perfect line that's going to put the defence slightly out of kilter. But he's so quick. Like, even Johnny Quicker May than was I chasing thought. After him and yeah. had nothing. And Billy Vunipola was like, ah, lol.
I think it's that he's just... So he came, he played 40 minutes for Edinburgh, then was thrown in against Ireland?
France.
At
six.
Had a poor game.
Yeah.
Was then better against Wales. I think there was a little bit of fitness involved in that. Mm. Going back to what you were saying, though, Alan, about Scotland's deficiencies, which are definitely there, I think one thing that's definitely plagued this Scotland team throughout the whole thing has been defensive, like lapses of defensive judgment. That yes. have then led to 7 points because the teams we're playing against are very, very good at putting them down. Definitely one of the... the fuck-up for the Ireland try was just a miscommunication, Seymour and Maitland, but also the one... the close ruck defence that let Stockdale go straight through for that try. That's just... that's quite poor.
I think
on England, obviously they were getting beat, but that first try... So 90 seconds in, if that, Sam Johnson
and Greg,
they fire out of the line, and it's just defensive. Like they're overexcited, and what I feel, and it goes back to last Six Nations as well, that we're just giving away at least 7 points every game from a mistake entirely down to just a defensive lapse.
A lot of it's on the outside as well. I know the Ireland gate, putting Ireland outside, but that Wales try, Seymour coming in.
Correct.
And it was a tough one, but for the Johnny May try where Slade pops out of the back, which was truly a beast.
I liked it when he set up now as well. He was just running with the ball in one hand for the whole time, and then just transferred it.
You were the one who was sandbagging Slade last week.
He was good. He was good.
Yeah, but even it was a tough position, but Graham came up and actually the ball went straight across him into Slade's hands and created that space for Slade to run.
Did you watch the Squidge Rugby video about it?
I currently have it loaded on my work laptop.
It's pretty good, and it focuses a lot on that, and it basically says that, like, Nick Grigg is, as we sort of suspected, like a really great, like, ball of muscle club player, but he's just so eager to make an impression. And maybe it's just that match, but there's quite a few examples, including the Jack Nell try, where he comes in and leaves Darcy Graham. And even Darcy Graham, to be fair, had a couple of misreads where he comes in. Yeah. And, to be fair, he's got a decision to make because Scotland have got their spacing wrong. And he's sort of...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Facing three men. But, and then, as you said, the Wales, Seymour coming in off his wing. I just slightly wonder about Matt Taylor as the defence coach now. I think for a while under Townsend, it's been a bit of, right, okay, we'll score more points than you. Yeah. It doesn't matter, our attack's so good. And it's sort of, I don't know, I think he should be under scrutiny a bit more.
So is the answer not Gatland, but Edwards?
That's what I was going to say. If only there was a world-renowned defence coach on the market.
Well, you could get them both, couldn't you?
You could get them both.
In terms of people on the market, you get Sean Edwards in as defence coach. You get Vern Cotter in as director of rugby.
Yeah.
And here we go.
I mean, if you could get... I think they should definitely make a play for him.
Vern or Edwards?
I mean, Vern wouldn't come. That's a bit ridiculous.
I think the SRU have pissed off Vern enough.
But Edwards genuinely putting in the defensive system and just... you know, like adding a bit more grit to a Scotland team that you could say aren't exactly the toughest.
Isn't Sean Wayne meant to be doing some stuff?
Yeah, he hasn't been mentioned since the day
what's
he was hired.
What's Sean Wayne doing?
I thought there was chat that Sean Wayne was going back to rugby league.
Is he?
But he's meant to be a head of professional development.
There's chat that Edwards might be going back to Wigan.
They'd agreed that Edwards was going to go back to Wigan, and now it turns out that there was like never actually a contract signed. I think they like agreed over the phone, and then there was no contract for 3 months. Edwards messaged him, and they were like, new number, who dis?
I'm on Sean Wayne's LinkedIn.
Are you?
I didn't know he had one. He is high-performance coach at Scottish Rugby Union. He describes the job as analytical insight and technical A&D applied methods to develop an overall enhanced squad both in training and game day performance.
I mean, it says here that he was linked with a return to rugby league with Newcastle Thunder, who I don't think are even in the Super League. I mean, why would you?
He must hate the SRU. He must hate Scottish Rugby if he's looking at that.
But I think there was a bit of stuff around his contracts when he had said he'd go to the SRU, and then Wigan made a big play for him to stay. But by all accounts, he is working for the SRU.
Yeah. Just to go back to the game quickly. Interesting moment. I think it was 31-19, and Scotland basically just piled on everyone.
Yeah.
They were like Fraser Brown, Josh Strauss.
55 minutes, yeah.
Fraser Brown, Josh Strauss, Johnny Gray.
Bergen, go on.
Bergen, I think he did it actually.
Yeah.
England put a couple of subs on, but didn't put most of the subs on until 70 minutes.
Yeah.
And actually, I think between 57 and 80 minutes, I actually thought Gray, Strauss, Brown, apart from that penalty at the end, and Bergen all put in a really good shift.
Yeah.
And actually, even more than the first 70 minutes of the second half, actually upped the physicality from a Scotland side. I actually thought Johnny Gray was probably his best 23 game. Minutes.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
I was like, he's impressive. Never thought I would recommend Johnny Gray as a bench option.
Yeah, I know.
Because he doesn't seem as that like, dynamic.
As the finisher, Johnny Gray.
But he is extraordinarily high quality, and he does have, you know, that.
Well, he's gonna fancy his chances of outworking people who've played 50 or 60 minutes in a match.
Yeah.
And at that time, that might make more of an impact than just hitting rucks from minute one.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting thing with Gray, because I almost feel like he's got that in him, like from that Saracens game, he seemed to be like a bit angry, and he's obviously like a bit sour in this game. It's like it's almost like somewhat like he needs to get like Richie Gray in before a game and like call him names or something, like bully, like I don't know, get him angry, because he just looks so placid and just sort of once in a while it kind of seems when he gets a little bit fired up, he has those big moments in him.
For the good of Scottish rugby, Johnny Gray should move to Edinburgh and work under Richard Cockerell.
Yeah. 100%.
Look what Cockerell's done to Gilchrist, Toulis, Fraser McKenzie, Callum Hunter-Hill. These lads are like gnarled, aggressive.
Talking about the two, I mean, Ben Toulis is probably the standout second row.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ahead of Grant Gilchrist.
Yeah. I think he had a good tournament overall, actually.
Coming from the man who said he would lose his eyes before Toulis got to start for Scotland.
I've already said that.
That was a long time ago, wasn't it?
That was episode 2. I think
he was quite bad back then. Like he has.
I think he carried the can for that Italy defeat when he came on off the bench.
As much as I have been on a journey with Ben Toulis, I think Ben Toulis has been on a professional development journey as well.
Yeah. So what you're saying is he is going to be a Lions starter tournament.
I think he should be a Scotland starter. I think Toulis and Gilchrist, that front five of Dell, McInally, Nell, Toulis, and Gilchrist is the best Scotland front five at the moment.
I'd find it hard to argue with that.
Wait, who was the other prop?
Dell and Nell.
Dell and Nell. So full Edinburgh front five.
Yeah, full Edinburgh front five. I think you can make the case for Fraser Brown, but ultimately he's not going to start against Stuart McInally, ahead of Stuart McInally at the moment.
Probably not.
I don't think he will. I do think that Fraser Brown, I think McInally is a better impact off the bench than Brown is. I don't know
if I agree with that. I think it's the other way around.
Really?
Yeah, I think Brown's done a good job coming off the bench.
Yeah.
I think your first game, all being fit against Ireland at the World Cup, you start that Edinburgh front five, assuming all being well with his fitness and things like that, I think it's hard to look past giving John Barkley the 6 jersey, Hamish Watson the 7 jersey. Actually, maybe it's a whole Edinburgh pack then. Bradbury.
Bradbury.
I wasn't. So I think Skinner is a very, very quality player, but he was. He looked, and it's maybe he's coming back from injury. I thought he was a little off the pace against England.
I think of he was the one who, when he got subbed off for Strauss, I literally turned. I was like, I did not realize Sam.
And then I suppose he did an okay pass to Darcy Graham's try, but
yeah,
that finish was all Darcy Graham though. Like, anyone could have done that.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a bit weird thinking of having like an all club pack as your sort of starting international.
Well, that's going to be the Champions Cup winning pack if you think about it.
Well, that's the thing.
That is true.
Three games, baby.
Three games.
I mean, we haven't actually talked about him, but do we need to talk about how good Finn Russell was?
I mean, I think the thing is, last Six Nations, people were questioning his mental fortitude.
Yes.
And then he pulled that performance out of the bag against England.
Yeah.
And I mean, once again, to have such a bad half and then the second half, not let that affect him and not let that change the way he plays is like just really impressive. Speaks to the fact that he is genuinely, it's like he's playing in the park at school.
I lost my mind at his interception.
Oh my god, so good!
that was the moment when I completely lost my mind.
Did you think that? I know we're talking about. Did you think that? Obviously, that was the Farrell intercept. Do you think that Farrell's tackle on Darcy Graham warranted more than a penalty?
I actually did.
So did I.
I think if he was holding on to the ball and that same action happens, you get a yellow card.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think he's got away with it because he has committed to a hit and the kick has gone.
Yeah.
It happened.
His arm kind... The thing is, he doesn't wrap the arm, but it swings round. I think that makes it look better than it is.
I'm not ashamed to say that I was very much chanting that he should go off when I was in the... it was happening quite close in front of me. And it took a long time from the TMO to have a look. So it felt like from the stands, when you're not hearing the commentary and things like that, it felt to me that once the referee, play went on for a little bit, it stopped. Then there was a bit of a chat between the captains. Mm. Then the referee went to the TMO. At that stage, I was like, well, that's got to be, somebody's had a word in his ear and saying, you have to have a look at that.
Yeah.
And then when you saw it on the big screen in slow motion, it looked really, really bad. So I was really surprised that it was only a penalty because I thought it was high. It was off the ball and there was no intention of wrapping the arms.
Yeah.
Yes. No, I agree. And then I know there's not been... All the footage seems really grainy of like Manu Tuilagi's hit on Sam Johnson.
So bad.
The only mitigating circumstances I can see is that Johnson's kind of like ducking slightly.
Yeah.
But even that swinging arm is probably going to hit him in the chin rather than like the temple. I'm just surprised... Surely Johnson should get up at that point and say to McAnally, because it led directly to the try, didn't it, pretty much?
They got the ball back, and then I think over a series of phases. Yeah.
But you should say to him, go and check that. Like, I've been whacked around the head.
Yeah.
But I mean, he didn't look very well at that time, so maybe he was just sort of focusing on getting back into the pitch.
Yeah.
I thought that was disappointing. And then I don't have gripes about the referee because Scotland still should have won the game, but I think that final penalty against Fraser Brown was dubious. And then, did you see George Ford took like an extra 10 metres from the kick?
Yeah.
And I still think even if he didn't get it into the five, they would have had a good chance of scoring.
At that stage, and I'll talk you through my last minute of that game. So Sam Johnson has scored this try, and it feels to me... Have you ever seen that Oasis documentary, Supersonic?
No.
Anyway, you should watch it. It's really good. But the big thing, it all focuses around them playing at Nebworth, and it's like 80,000 people.
Yeah.
And Liam Gallagher does this whole thing, and he's just like, you know, 80,000 people chanting my name.
Yeah.
I was singing Flower of Scotland, and I genuinely felt like that. I was like, this is my moment. Like, this is the moment in which Scotland are going to do the best thing that I'm ever going to see live. And it felt to me that the whole stadium was singing. Now, on the replay, that wasn't the case. But at 79 minutes, the ball... Finn had just done an amazing... Yeah, turned the ball over, he kicked it in. It's in their 22.
Yeah.
I just... How are we not? Why are we even competing on the ground? Why is Fraser Brown even putting his hands anywhere near that ball?
The thing is, people can say it's like a mental fragility, but I don't know. I just think it's like... just a bit of bad luck, actually.
You think?
Like, Adam Hastings was very close to taking out, was it May on the touchline?
Yes.
Or Noel? Really close to taking him out. He should have made that hit, to be fair. Like, the penalty, as I said, was dubious. Finn comes slightly out of the line, but, you know, it's the 80th minute of a match. Like,
yeah,
you give him count a bit, and he's doing it in the 22. It's kind of like a calculated risk.
I think once you get, once England are in the 22, the ref is looking for things to give a penalty.
Yeah.
You're giving him an excuse in that situation to give a penalty. 80 minutes, yeah. Whatever. So it was very frustrating that England were able to come 80 metres to get there.
Yeah. Well, I was chatting to someone and we were looking at the last England try and we were saying if that was scored in rugby league, that would 100% have been chalked off.
For crossing.
For the fact that Finn Russell's line to tackle George Forward is blocked.
Yeah.
By two England forwards in front of him. I do not know 100% sure whether that is something that should be picked up in union or not. But there is definitely Russell, his tackling line, when he's going straight, gets blocked by the two forwards in front of Forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know the hindsight is an amazing thing, but what we should have done is let Jack now go over on the touchline.
I know. I was kind of thinking that.
Who's going to think that in that moment?
I know, exactly. Like, in that moment, you are fighting for your fucking
imagine
life.
If you're like, you're on the wing, you're like, on you go.
I would have loved it. Ushered him in and say, fair enough, if you get this, it's a draw. What a great game of rugby, but you're going to have to do it from 45 metres on the touchline.
The thing is, Russell and Hastings are the only two players that I think could ever even consider that. And it was Hastings who made the tackle.
I know, but that's some serious, like, mental strength.
If Ford pings it over straight through, you look like the biggest dickhead
possible. Yeah.
Got an interesting point for you.
Go on then.
So Scotland actually had less possession in the second half than they did in the first half.
Really?
Had 40% possession in the second half, 43% in the first half. And in the second half only had 34% territory.
Ooh. Just shows that all those stats are such a waste of time.
I do remember there's one thing, I think it was when ITV was showing it, I was watching the replay back of the second half on the Sunday, and there was, like, I think we were 31 all, and we'd only had, like, 1% of time in the England 22.
Yeah.
And it was just, it
had
just been such a snatch and grab job.
It was not 30 seconds or something.
Yeah, it was an absolutely tiny amount of time.
Yeah. I suppose my final point is, I think there's quite a lot of, like, English bashing from Scotland fans just for, not the sake of it, but the history behind everything. Sometimes doing it is fair. Like the Farrell stuff, I'm like, fine. But Eddie Jones is literally the worst. Like, the stuff he was saying before the match was embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's like laughing, really disrespectful. And I don't mind like the banter and everything, but and a thing like that happens, and it just makes you really, really happy. Like, it deserves everything he gets in terms of an England team that's really struggling.
His reaction to the loss has been really, like, bemusing. Like,
what's he said?
Well, he said that he thinks there's a mental fragility in the squad dating back to the 2015 World Cup, of which I think there's like three people that played.
Yeah.
He's just shifting the blame. It's very, very strange.
I also think he said, he's like, yeah, we know what the problem is. We can fix it. It's like, you only got four matches, son, to the World Cup.
There you go.
Yeah.
Should we finish off with a little bit of player of the tournament?
Yeah.
Who do you think was who's your forward of the tournament? Alan, come to you.
Forward the tournament. God, it's kind of a tough one.
Yeah.
Not really anyone. Dell.
Alan Dell really improved in my sort of standing of him. I thought his around the park game was really, really fantastic.
Mm. Yeah, I think of him and Nell, he's definitely stood out more. Obviously, in open play, he's always stood out more. But even Fell, just generally, Dell was offering a lot more.
It usually feels that the scrum's a talking point at the Six Nations, but I don't think like any game's really sort of like turned on a scrum this year.
I think
it feels like it's less of a weapon this year than it has.
We struggled a bit against France.
Yeah. I
think particularly when we brought in guys like Alex Allen, for example.
Why are you hating Alex Allen?
Yeah, as soon as I said that. I think Jamie Ritchie had a really great tournament.
I think
it would have been interesting if he had been fit at the weekend, but as a guy who's only got a handful of caps.
23 years old?
I would be tempted to give it to him.
Very, very good. I think Stuart McInally was consistently pretty good. He didn't hit his extremely high highs that he usually has, but
I think he got better as the tournament went on. I don't get a very good start, but
yeah.
Hamish Watson for a game and a half.
He was like one run.
Yeah. His stats against England were pretty good as well.
Yeah, they were.
What about backs?
I mean, Finn, obviously, I thought had actually very good games when he was playing.
Finn's a general standout. Johnson.
I was going to say Johnson.
Bookending. He's like good performance Italy and England.
Yeah.
Relatively quiet in the rest of the games.
Well, he only played in the... He only played Ireland. So, and for someone once again who's...
And he was also very... Yeah, so clearly quiet against Wales and France because he was not there.
He didn't play. I thought he was good. I thought... Potentially give it to Darcy Graham, even though he only played three matches.
I think, yeah. I think Darcy Graham is
just electrifying.
He just does... He looks like he cuts it. And I just don't understand how he manages to ride contact so well.
Yeah.
He's an absolute unit.
Yeah.
He's a really good athlete.
I thought actually Maitland against England was really, really good.
Yeah.
And he can, obviously can just be that fullback cover if he can
just mix it at that level that he's just got so
he
much
seems
quality.
He's comfortable, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think with Darcy Graham, he's just got, it's like an old like football adage, like he just can't defend against pace.
And yeah,
like Darcy Graham's just got that really electric, like fast twitch muscle fibers. Like he's just
explosive.
Everything he does is so fast.
Well, the thing is, you could see. I think there was about a split second where Daly was like, "I've got him," and then he was just like, "Oh shit, I'm not gonna get him."
And I was thinking, I was like, "Why are you not diving?"
That's Graham? What I thought.
Like,
what,
yeah. You're gonna get pushed into touch, but you must have just been thinking, "I've got an Daly." Daly's absolute jets as well.
Daly is so quick.
But I just think that. Graham in particular, it's not just like little flashes with the ball in hand. He's like really accomplished under the high ball. He seems like there's quite a sort of mature player overall.
There's a couple of times when Scotland were trying to use him at sort of like close quarters to try and like find those little gaps at rucks. And I was like, nah, that's maybe
give him space.
That's maybe not what we need to do. Quick moment of the tournament. Mind me, Sam Johnson's handoff on Elliot Daly.
Oh, so
I will watch that forever.
That or being at the stadium with Watson's run was like, well, his two runs, I suppose.
Against Wales, wasn't it?
Oh, against Wales.
Changed
those,
the turn.
Those were genuinely just got everyone on their feet excited. That was one of my favourites.
Harking back an awful long way, the first try we scored against Italy, Finn's cross kick to Kinghorn.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't even break stride. It's literally...
It's awesome. And it's kind of off his wrong foot as
and
well.
You're just like,
not his wrong foot, but...
That was when life was good.
It's the harder side to kick from. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
That's the Six Nations done for another year.
I know.
If only there was another massive rugby tournament that we can get excited about.
Maybe it's a subject for another time. Is that... Do you think it's price starting World Cup?
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
Let's save that for another
his
time.
His second half probably redeemed him.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think... He had made that big an impact against Wales or in the first half against England.
No.
And if he hadn't done that chip to set up the Bradbury try, which in his fairness he did do, so you can't take it away from him.
Yeah.
How involved was he
the first half was pretty shocking.
Yeah, how involved was he for actually the rest of that Scotland performance? But that is a discussion for another day.
Right, we've got a wee quiz.
We've got a wee quiz.
Quick quiz to finish off? Oh no, we've still got Pro 14. Bloody hell.
Wow. So, interestingly, there was no Scotland player that played every minute of the Six Nations. The only players to do it were Josh Adams, Elliot Daly, Jonathan Davis, Jaden Hayward, and Peter Romani. But the only five players to play 400 minutes.
Okay.
What two Scottish players played the most minutes?
Played the most minutes.
In the Six Nations.
Interestingly,
it's really hard to think about what players started all games.
I think McAnally started every game.
But he comes off.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go... Well, that's one of my answers.
So McAnally's one of your answers.
McAnally's also was going to be one of my answers. I know it sounds bad, but
so
it
you
was.
So you're both going to go with McAnally as one? And then what's your other one?
Gilchrist.
Thinking now, but there's no way he's chunked through that much work. I mean, I think Gilchrist is probably right now I've heard it said out loud. Maitland?
So he
had an injury in one game, didn't he?
Gilchrist is number one,
mm-hmm.
376. McAnally is third on 314.
My other one was going to be Dell.
Dell is fourth on 313.
Oh, shoot.
I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
This player only played 4 games.
Is it Richie?
No.
Yeah.
480s. Laidlaw?
Is that a wee clue there?
Laidlaw started 3 games.
Seymour.
But you're literally just like, you're doing your hands. It's like, it's somebody
passing
a rugby.
Finn!
All right.
I was doing a no look pass. All right. Jeez.
Whilst looking at me.
Whilst looking at you.
That is no look.
Yeah, 315. So he was actually, he played the second most games, but didn't play all games.
Interesting.
But yeah. And then, who do you think had the most meters? Scotland.
Kinghorn.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Both Kinghorn, yes. Third overall behind Stockdale. And Hayward. Hayward's like top of everything.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Suppose you play every minute of the tournament. You'll be doing something right. Fair play.
Everyone think. And then defenders beaten across Six Nations.
I think I know this.
Are you going to go for it?
Joint,
is it?
Oh, no, wait, sorry, that's in one game. So it's joint, because Sam Johnson and Watson both beat, I think they in one game they've both beaten 10. But that's why I was getting my stats mixed up. So defenders
Graham only played 3 matches, didn't he? No, 2.
Defenders beaten.
I'm going to say Bradbury.
You are wrong, Sam.
That's going rogue.
I'm still going to say Sam Johnson.
Sam Johnson is correct. Second equal with Huger on 18.
Who had the most defenders beaten?
Stockdale on 23.
Really? I thought he had quite a quiet tournament.
So did I. But he's like literally top of like
Lidner as well.
Everything. I'll give you one last one.
Cool.
Top missed tackles.
Oh, God.
Well, of Scotland.
Your top two for Scotland.
Top 2 missed tackles for Scotland.
And we've got the top 2 in the Six Nations.
Have we?
And they didn't
really?
They didn't even both play all games.
Oh.
Pete Horn?
I was going to say Pete Horn as well.
No.
Seems quite shan.
Yeah, I know. Felt bad.
One forward, one back.
Greg?
No. One back row.
Richie?
Nope.
Strauss
was top with missed 15 missed tackles
15
and
misses.
64 tackles made.
So we're looking for a back.
A back.
Finn?
I was going to say him, to be fair.
So this is a little bit of a concerning stat, although when Ellis Genge absolutely boshed him. So 14 missed tackles and 26 made tackles.
Really?
Doesn't
pretty
seem
bad stats, man.
There's some bad stats.
But yeah, that's not good at all.
So yeah, there you go. But yeah, it's I guess it kind of shows the fact that we've only got one player out of, I think it's like the top 20 players have played the most minutes, just shows how much turnover there has been.
Yeah, for sure.
That team.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Right, should we do the Pro 14?
Should we do the Pro 14?
And let's get it. We've got 4 minutes to get it under an hour.
Oh, yeah, we don't want to go over an hour. Okay, no. So very quickly, Edinburgh versus Leinster on Friday night at not sold out BT Murrayfield. Great team that's been named, though. Matt Scott back in the centre for Edinburgh. John Barkley at 6. And how good is that back row? Barkley at 6, Watson at 7, and Big Bill at 8.
I mean, obviously, they're like must-win games in the run-up, but
yeah, they have to.
I do feel quite bad for the Edinburgh guys who've just been playing the Six Nations. It's like, sorry, lads, get straight back.
Yeah, most of them got Darcy's playing.
Yeah, Darcy.
I feel like it feels like Nell is the one that's got like the raw deal.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true.
Because, like, you know, like, Graham's on the wing, like, whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you
yeah.
can play all your games. Like, they've given McAnally a rest.
Also, Graham's, like, 21. Like, he yeah, bounces exactly. back from international rugby. So, yeah.
I was like, I'm a dad.
And even though Toulis and Watson are in, like, they've only really played, like, one or two games. So yeah, it doesn't really matter. Nell's been in the coal face for, like, the whole tournament.
I'm quite surprised that Barkley's actually gone straight into the starting lineup.
He's not
played
for
16 months.
I think he might be in quite good nick.
I mean, he will be, but
an Achilles injury. He'll probably, probably the first time he's been able to do lots of weights consistently for a long time.
Yeah, but he hasn't played intense rugby for 16 months.
I made that. He was tweeting, Sonny McLaughlin tweeted him earlier, being like, hope the lungs hold out. And he was just like, they are empty Capri Sun cartons.
Right at the end of it. Oh, that's
that
pretty
quite
good.
Funny, yeah.
It'd be interesting. I think Barkley and Watson versus Rhys Ruddock and Dan Lee. Mm. It's actually quite a good test for both of them.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be interesting how they do.
And Leinster haven't named a full strand side.
No. Like, it's your classic, so like, good, Ross Byrne at 10, Joel Tamani at 12.
At 12?
Like, yeah. Like, you got Barry Daly on the wing.
Barry.
I've got no idea who that guy is. They still got, like, Sean Cronin and, like, Fergus McFadden. Yeah. Luke McGrath, like...
Is it at home? Yeah, sorry, it's at Murrayfield, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Feels to me that Edinburgh need and want this win much more than Leinster do.
Yeah, definitely.
Because Leinster are, what, like 30 points ahead of the top of their conference?
So what do we reckon then? Do you think Edinburgh can do it?
Yeah. Why not? They need to. I think they need to, and I think Edinburgh...
If they can't win with that team, then, you know, they're not going to win any more games.
Can you imagine, like, Cockers is in their head being like, you've had amazing success in the Champions Cup this year. It means nothing if we're not there next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can imagine, the next 2 weeks, Edinburgh lose to Leinster and then get beaten by Munster. Season over, Champions Cup.
Rubbish. Bad season.
No playoffs.
Yeah.
Whereas, you win this game and you stay in the mix. You beat Munster, everyone's just like, King Cockers is here.
Right, 2 minutes to go. Glasgow... are playing...
The Cheetahs. They haven't announced their
Scotstoun.
Team yet.
At 7:45.
At Scotstoun. That's got to be a Glasgow win. They've been riding high. They've done really, really well during the international period.
Yeah.
You can only imagine that...
Brandon Thompson taking them to a bonus point win. Warrior of the month, Brandon Thompson.
Warrior of the month. Just cannot stop winning.
Yeah.
That guy wins anything he wants. Pieces.
They do sort of need to keep up the pressure on Munster as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
Cheetahs at Scotstoun.
Get a bit of momentum
there is
going
not
into
a lot of excuses to lose that game for Glasgow.
Yeah, bit of momentum going into Saracens as well. So I'm backing a bonus point win for that boy.
How bad is Stuart Hogg's lid?
I like it.
The peroxide blonde
but
lid.
Is he doing it for like charity?
I think he's doing it to show off the fact that he's got hair now.
He's doing it because he looks baller. All right. If I could get away with that lid, I would do it all the time.
I'd so like to see you bring back the peroxide.
Yeah, and straighten it like back in the day.
Man, I looked the fucking tits.
You did have tits, to be fair.
I'd have tits currently.
Well, shall we end
it? Right, on that note, and that's under 60 as well.
We'll be back next week to preview the quarterfinal with the sweet prince, Chris Dean. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Acast. Send us some emails, thethistlerugby@gmail.com. Thanks a lot. Goodbye.
Bye.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.